last matter today, 2022-0732, matter of Kathleen McCarthy versus Peter Lee, MD. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Bose. Good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court. My name is Jeff Bose. I represent Kathleen McCarthy along with my co-counsel, Sarah Nichols. I would please reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal if I can possibly get my initial statement done in 10 minutes. Kathleen McCarthy filed a medical malpractice case within the statute of limitations and within the statute of repose through a prior counsel. That prior counsel dismissed the case without prejudice and told Kathleen that she had a full year to refile it. She only, in fact, had 3 or 4 months before the statute of repose ran. So when she did refile it, her case was barred by the statute of repose, and when the court decided the Wilson versus Durrani case, her case then was subsequently dismissed. Now, in that first case, her minor kids were not made parties to the case. So we, as her new counsel in 2020, decided to file an action on their behalf for the first time. Now, the statute of repose and the statute of limitations, as you know, do not apply to minors. So we did not think this would be a problem. However, the defense argued in a 12B6 motion that the children's claims had to go along with the parents' claims. If the parents' claim is barred by the statute of repose, then the children's claims cannot proceed independently of the parent. We disagree with that. The trial court agreed with the defendant, dismissed the case. The Court of Appeals affirmed it.
Counsel, would you agree there's in Ohio there's a difference between statute of limitations and statutes of repose?
They are different, but they are nearly identical. They are two dates on the calendar. When a medical claim comes into our office, we put two dates on the calendar, and that claim has to be filed before the earlier of those two dates. The statute of limitations is variable because we have this discovery rule. It may or may not come before the statute of repose. The claim has to be filed before the earlier of those two dates. But the effect of a case that's either barred by either statute, the effect is identical. The words of the statute are identical. If you read the statute of limitations and the statute of repose, the words that the General Assembly used are identical. Section A is the statute of limitations. It says an action upon a medical claim shall be commenced. The statute of repose, the language is no action upon a medical claim shall be commenced more than 4 years after. So the language of the statutes themselves are identical. Our position is that the effect of a case barred by the statute of repose has the exact identical effect as a case barred by the statute of limitations. Now, there are two issues here. Does the statute of repose apply to minors? And I think even the other side's going to concede that it does not apply to minors. The second issue is this question of whether the minors' claims can proceed untethered from the parents' claim that is barred by the statute of repose. And we have given the court about 10 cases that hold that yes, when it comes to the statute of limitations defense, those claims can proceed without the primary claim. Many cases. There is a nearly identical case, and all the court needs to do is follow the Dean versus Angelus case. And this was apparently a fight. Apparently, Angelus won the fight, so Dean and his wife brought a case against Angelus. They brought the claims together. The husband's claim had a 1 year statute of limitations for battery. The wife's consortium claim has a 4 year statute as a consortium claim. The trial court dismissed the whole case on the statute of limitations. The Supreme Court remanded the wife's claim. So by implication, the court is saying, well, the husband's claim is barred by the 1 year statute of limitations, but the wife's claim can proceed, and they remanded the case back to the trial court. We're asking the court to do the exact same thing in this case. The only difference is that we're dealing with the statute of repose versus the statute of limitations.
Well, but is it procedurally, is the procedure there a difference with a distinction in that in the Angelos case, they were filed together? The court erroneously dismissed the wife's consortium claim and said so it should have been allowed to continue. In this case, you didn't have the children's claims filed, so they weren't erroneously dismissed. Does that matter?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it would make any difference if
you
they
think
had
the,
been joined.
You think the implication of a loss of consortium claim proceeding is not tethered to or does not have to be attached to the malpractice claim?
It does not. Under the civil rules, we are supposed to join all claims. Not minors, but all derivative claims should be joined. Now, the Supreme Court has held that we must, according to the Supreme Court, join the minor's claims with the parent's claims. But that is a waivable defense. That's the issue of joinder. And that is not before the court, because that's waivable, and it was waived in this case. There was no motion filed in that first proceeding that was filed by the parents. There was no motion filed to bring in the kids. But I guess my point in answering your question, Justice Stewart, is that it wouldn't make any difference if they were brought together or brought separately. They should be brought together, granted. But they can be brought separately, and if they are, then it's the same principle. The derivative claim can proceed without the primary claim. So I don't think it would have made any difference had they been brought together.
Counsel, my earlier question, and now I wasn't on the Wilson versus Durrani case.
I noticed that.
But paragraphs 8 and 9 seem to disagree with your view that statutes of repose and statutes of limitations are treated the same.
I recognize that. And if I can make
if I can make one
important point today, if I can accomplish one thing, I hope that this panel will reconsider that, because the logic is that with the statute of repose, if the claim is barred by the statute of repose, it no longer exists. Whereas if it's the statute of limitation, it exists but can't be filed. I completely disagree with that. It is our position that they are exactly the same. The statute uses the same language. This idea comes from a concurring opinion by Justice Douglas in the Momeny case, where he says a statute of limitations works upon the remedy, whereas a statute of repose works upon the right. I'm sorry, we disagree with that. It is our position.
Wouldn't we have to overrule those two paragraphs?
No.
To affirm you?
Because.
To agree with you, I'm sorry.
I don't think so, because it is dicta. That is not a finding. It wasn't an issue before the court, and there's no precedent for it. That is not a legal concept that has any grounding at all. In Justice Douglas's concurring opinion, when he says that, there's no cite. There's no reference to a law review article. There's no basis for it at all. He just says it. Then all these courts of appeals pick up on that, and you are correct that in the Wilson case, the court picked up on it. The majority in that court picked up on it. We disagree with it. We think that the effect of a case barred by the statute of repose is exactly the same as a case barred by the statute of limitations. It's time barred. It can no longer be filed. That's the only effect. This business about it not existing, disagree with it.
Because the statute of repose really is there to give clarity to the one who's deemed to have committed the tort, to say your position of risk for liability ends at a certain point.
Yes.
And calling that elimination of a claim, you're arguing, just doesn't fit.
It doesn't eliminate the claim. The claim still exists. The claim is in the same situation it was. It just cannot be filed after that date. And again, I would stress, does not apply to the claims of minors. So we're talking about derivative claims here, and that rule would not apply to minors in any event.
So if the underlying case brought on behalf of the decedent had resulted in, for instance, a jury finding that there was no liability, then obviously the claims of the minors couldn't proceed. But in this case, because it was deemed to be time barred one way or another, you're saying that still leaves the door open for the minors, correct?
Actually, in your first hypothetical, that is the Kraut versus Cleveland Railway case, where the lady is hurt on a railroad. She sues the railroad for her personal injury. It goes to trial. She loses. Defense verdict. Then the husband comes in for a consortium claim, and the defense says, well, it's res judicata. He can't do that. Supreme Court said, no, it's a separate and independent claim. And they gave him they remanded the case back for trial for the husband's claim. So does that rule stand today? That was a 1936 case. It's never been overruled.
It was last cited in, 1970 by us?
Oh, boy. I know it's been cited. I think it was cited in the Bowen versus Kilcare case. It hasn't been cited for a long time in the contemporary cases that you don't
and
see
if, it. If we would actually follow Kraut, I mean, that would completely upset our modern notions of res judicata, right?
I beg your pardon?
Well, Kraut is inconsistent with our case law on what res judicata means, right?
I don't think so. They're different parties, so the res judicata does not work out. Including privity. There's no privity between family members, believe it or not. The court has said several times that there is no legal privity between family members. And the res judicata, you have to have the same parties. You have to have an identity of parties. So if you've got a different party, which is a derivative claim, res judicata does not apply. So that part of Kraut has been upheld. So I think that Kraut should be followed, but more importantly, Dean versus Angelis, to us, is nearly identical to this situation. You're just talking about statute of limitations versus statute of repose. I'm at 3:20. So if there are no further questions at this time, I'll reserve the final three or so for rebuttal, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Traven, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. My name is Mike Traven. I represent the appellees in this case. I think the primary question in this case is whether a loss of consortium claim can survive where the primary claim has been dismissed by the medical claim statute of repose. Both lower courts have answered that question no. We believe this court should follow those two decisions. And there's a logical and straightforward reason for that. A loss of consortium claim is a derivative claim. This court has held that multiple times over the years. A derivative claim is dependent on the existence of the underlying primary claim. This court has also held that multiple times over the years. The statute of repose extinguishes the primary claim, or bars it, as this court held in Wilson. Thus, where you have a primary claim that's dismissed by the medical claim statute of repose, a derivative claim, regardless of who files it, must also be dismissed. As the amici brief has noted, the majority of the courts around the country who have decided this precise issue have held that where the primary claim is extinguished by the statute of repose, the derivative claim is barred as well, and we believe this court should hold that as well.
How do we reconcile that with the Dean case, Dean versus Angelis?
Yeah, the Dean case involved a predecessor of the statute of limitation that exists currently for a medical claim. At that time, there were two different statutes of limitation that applied for a primary claim, in other words, the individual injured, and a derivative claim, a spouse in that particular case. The General Assembly has since amended that statute, and it specifically states that a derivative claim is a medical claim and therefore has a one-year statute of limitation. So if the Dean case were decided today, it would reach a different result based on the amendment of that statute. I also want to note that this court does not need to specifically review the statute of repose to determine whether any exceptions apply, as the appellants have argued that the statute of repose creates an exception of the primary derivative concept. But this court doesn't need to review that, because this case is about primary claims and derivative claims. There is no dispute that a primary claim by the parents was filed. There is no dispute that a primary claim was dismissed by the statute of repose. And that holding is firm and final. There is no changing that outcome.
And so, how is reconciling the exception for juveniles? Your argument is it's only if there's a primary claim?
Yes. So there is language in the statute of repose that says, except as to claims of minors. As we've set forth in our brief, we think the only reasonable interpretation of that portion of the statute is that it applies to the primary claim of a minor. In other words, if a child claims an injury through treatment by a physician or hospital, that claim would survive under the statute of repose and would be uninterrupted.
Aren't we speculating, though? Couldn't the legislature very easily have stated that?
I don't think the legislature needed to state that because of the concept of primary and derivative claims. In other words, you must have a primary claim to have a derivative claim. This court said in Tomlinson that a derivative claim would not exist but for the primary action. And because of that holding, which has been uninterrupted, I think, for at least 25 or 30 years, and I think is good law, the parent's primary claim would have to be filed within 4 years of the statute of repose. If that doesn't happen, then there's no derivative claims that can exist after that fact.
Well, but Mr. Bousset's analysis, the claim is still there. It's just there's just a prevention of it being filed. So arguably the harm itself is still there or not by legal liability. The evidence is still there or not. So the claim of the injury is still there, such that the derivative claim can actually be adjudicated. And why would there be a difference between a juvenile's primary claim or a juvenile's derivative claim if the statute is told during a juvenile's time of being a juvenile or minor?
Yes. Well, two points, because I think you raised two questions. Number one, this court's recent precedent on the statute of repose holds that when the statute of repose applies, there is no longer a claim, that the statute of repose extinguishes it. It is no longer legally cognizable, to use the term of the Bowen Court that the appellants have asserted in this case.
Well, it does it say legally, not legally cognizable? It's the inability to bring it. It doesn't take and wipe away potential liability. It wipes away the ability to have liability.
Well, I respectfully disagree. Okay. As it relates to what this court's precedent has held, as it relates to the statute of repose. This court's precedent has held that the statute of repose extinguishes the claim.
Held or dicta?
Held. In Antoon and in Wilson, this court has held that.
And as you probably read from my opinion, I disagree, but I was in the minority. As Justice Donnelly said, why couldn't the General Assembly say, with the exception of minors, primary claims?
Yeah, I don't think the General Assembly needed to state that, and because the concept of primary and derivative claims has been well established in this court's jurisprudence. As we indicated, back to 1969 in Whitehead, this court said a loss of consortium claim is a derivative claim. This court said in several cases, unless you can't recover damages on the underlying claim, you can't proceed with the derivative claim. That's the very nature of what a derivative claim is.
But if we're called upon to interpret the plain language of the text, do you think it's wise for a court to just assume that they
were well aware of our case law in order to make that ruling?
Well, I think that you don't need to make that assumption. I think the fact of the matter is that language, as it applies, is meant to apply to a minor's claim, and that, quite frankly, if
only primary claims,
because if you would accept the appellant's argument, it would really swallow kind of the whole rule in and of itself. You would say, well, the parent's claim gets dismissed, but all these parties are going to have to wait decades later to figure out whether a minor child is going to bring a derivative claim. We don't think that that meets with the intent of what the statute of repose is, and we don't think the General Assembly needed to explicitly state that because of these concepts of primary and derivative claims.
But the problem is that joinder was waived.
Well, I would disagree with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because in the first case that was decided, a motion to dismiss was filed as it relates to the statute of repose. And the trial court granted that motion. You don't have to raise 10 or 15 different reasons why a case should be dismissed. The defendants in the underlying case decided that the reason they wanted to base it was on the statute of repose. I would also note that in that case, the underlying case, which is before this court as kind of a side case with the Everhart case that was just argued a couple of weeks ago, there was a wrongful death conditional claim that was asserted. And I would argue that in that instance, the children actually were a part of that first case. So I would say for multiple reasons that that argument was not waived.
But it was never, it was never listed in an answer or in a motion.
Well, I believe that the affirmative defenses that were raised in the answer would sufficiently save that argument, should it become necessary.
Which were, help me on this one.
You know, Your Honor, I don't have all of them listed in front of me, but I believe that concepts of res judicata and failure to state a claim and
there's no privity for res judicata.
Well, I think that
anything, is there anything else you have there besides res judicata? I mean, you throw out affirmative defense, but you're not telling me what they are.
Well, that was in the underlying case. And all I'm suggesting to the court is that because a motion to dismiss was filed on the basis of statute of repose, I don't believe a joinder argument was waived.
And you're pretty much looking at the fact that you don't think it was necessary to bring it because of the nature of statute of repose.
Right, because the statute of repose extinguished all causes of action in that case. With one argument, and so you don't need to raise multiple.
How close in time was the change in the amendment to the filing of this case?
The change in
the change in statute, which you're saying you're wanting us to interpret that it applies to just to minors' principal claims.
Well, I believe that the statute of repose here was enacted in 2003, so if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you.
As indicated, the primary concept in this case is the relationship between primary claims and derivative claims. As we cited in our brief, this is not a controversial concept. Appellate courts across Ohio have routinely and consistently applied that rule that where a primary claim is extinguished, so is the derivative claim. This court has held that the statute of repose extinguishes the claim. Therefore, the appellate court and the trial court reached correct rulings. The other thing I want to note, I know our brief went into quite a bit of discussion about whether there is an exception under res judicata, whether there is an exception for a contractual release or waiver, whether there is an exception under the statute of limitations. We don't believe you need to decide those issues to affirm the decision because this case doesn't involve any of those three issues. And secondly, even if those were valid exceptions, the statute of repose is different. And so Again, I know a lot of time was devoted to that in the briefs, but we don't believe this court needs to necessarily rule on those issues. Unless there are any other questions, I think I've reached the end of my argument. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bose, you've retained 3 minutes and 14 seconds.
Thank you, Judge. I would just make 2 points as to Justice Bruner's questions about joinder. You cannot save a joinder defense just by asserting it as an affirmative defense. We've got at least 12 Court of Appeals cases that say you have to file a motion. The defendant must file a motion. You can't just raise it. You have to ask the court and ask the other party to bring those derivative claims into the case. They did not do that, so they did waive it. Now, I didn't go into that too much because it wasn't debated until just 5 minutes ago. They did waive joinder. We do have a case cited in our reply on that point, but there are at least 10 more cases that say the exact same thing. We have a case in the reply that addresses that very point. Joinder was waived. Joinder is not before the court. I think that the court does understand that the issue in this case is what is the effect of that statute of repose? What is the effect of a claim that is barred by the statute of repose? If you buy this business, the claim no longer exists, I guess we lose. But we think that that's a legal fiction. It's a contrivance, and the court shouldn't indulge it. The court should say, Dean versus Angelis has the rule of law here. The exact same rule should apply to the statute of repose.
What's your response to your colleague's interpretation of the changed statute?
The statute has not changed. I don't know what he's referring to there, if he said that. The statute's been as it is, I believe, since 2003. The statute does not distinguish primary claims from derivative claims as it pertains to minors. The statute of repose just has lead language, the first 9 words of the statute, this does not apply to minors. So the statute of repose does not apply, never has, since this new statute. If it was applicable to minors, it would be unconstitutional. That was the court's decision in the Momini case, because the prior statute of repose did include kids. This one does not, for that very reason. It does not matter whether the derivative claim of a child is primary or derivative. The statute of repose does not apply to it. We have until the child's 19th birthday to file such claims. That's always been the case, and we've never known the law to be any different than that. If there's nothing further, thank you for taking this case, and thank you for the questions and your interest in the case.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court. Marshall, would you please close the court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.